Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello, and welcome to As It Is, a free daily 30-minute program designed to help you learn everyday American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz at Voice of America Learning English in Washington. Today on the program, we look at how Europe might benefit from the refugees fleeing Syria and Iraq. Europe is getting older, but many of the refugees are skilled, educated, and young. They might be just what Europe needs. Then we travel to Uganda, where illegal drug use is increasing, especially in the capital, Kampala, because neighboring Kenya and Tanzania are increasing their efforts to fight drug trafficking.
Now they want to surpass alcohol and get into the cocaine, the heroin, and it goes as far as you can imagine.
Then, as we always do on Mondays, we will bring you Jonathan Evans' technology report. This week, he tells us about possible changes coming to the ways solar panels are manufactured. Now, some of the devices are made with cadmium chloride, a substance that can be harmful to humans. But manufacturers may soon be able to create solar panels with safe, non-toxic chemicals. And as we do every weekday, we will present The Making of a Nation. Every day here at VOA Learning English, we bring you news from and about America and the world. And we tell you the often surprising and always interesting history of the United States. We are a little different here at VOA Learning English. Because we exist to help you learn everyday American English, we speak a little slower than normal, and we use words that are easy to understand. Listen to the program, then practice saying the words and sentences the way we do. It's a free and easy way to improve your American English skills every day of the year. We're on the radio, on the web, and we come to you on a podcast. We are wherever you are. We're the Voice of America. Thousands of war refugees from Syria and Iraq are arriving in Europe every day. Many of them are young, educated, and skilled. Those individuals and aid groups say the refugees should be welcomed and not feared. Like many young Syrians, 27-year-old Abdul Salam does not plan to return to his home country. He has been living in Turkey for the past 5 years, but does not believe he has much of a future there. The reason? Turkey has few jobs for refugees. He now talks of wanting to travel to Europe to complete his college studies and start a new life. The young man says many Europeans do not understand that many war refugees could help the countries that accept them. He says European governments should let the refugees seek visas. This might stop people from making dangerous journeys by sea or paying criminal groups to move them across borders. Mr. Salam and others say European countries should consider the refugees as an opportunity, not a burden. Benedict Dempsey is a policy director for the international aid group Mercy Corps. He says many people in Syria are highly educated. He notes that a large number of educated people are leaving Syria and now arriving in Europe. Mr. Dempsey says many refugees from the Middle East, Africa, and Afghanistan are seeking a better life. So too, he says, are many migrants, those moving from place to place for economic reasons. He says they want to work. He says they do not want to bring conflict to Europe. Some Europeans fear the refugees threaten the continent's security, economy, and culture. Some Americans are also worried about the effect of the refugees on their country. Donald Trump is seeking to become the Republican Party's presidential candidate. He has criticized President Barack Obama's plan to accept 10,000 Syrians into the United States. Mr. Trump said earlier this month that if he is elected president, he would return them to Syria because he fears they could be Islamists. Some political leaders in Europe have expressed similar concerns. Many European countries have an aging population. The young refugees could help lower the average age. More than one-fifth of Europeans will be 65 or older by 2025. If Europe does not become younger, it may not have the money to care for so many older people. Experts say refugees will continue to flee to Europe. Ugandan police are dealing with an increase in illegal drugs. Neighboring Kenya and Tanzania have increased their efforts to end the transport of illegal drugs. So smugglers are now said to be transporting large amounts of the drugs through Uganda. Officials say the criminals are using Entebbe Airport, near the capital Kampala, to transport heroin and cocaine to Europe. Some of the drugs are also being sold in Kampala. Health workers say this is leading to a sharp increase in the number of Ugandans who are addicted to illegal drugs. Ugandan health officials say they have seen an increase in the use of illegal drugs since 2011. A small amount of heroin can cost as little as $8. Cyrus Malcolm works for the Uganda Harm Reduction Network. He was once a drug addict. He says addicts are at risk of becoming infected with HIV, the virus that causes AIDS. People can die from AIDS if they are not treated with medicine.
The need and stringency program is not allowed in the country. And most of the drug users don't know that when they're injecting drugs, they're exposing their lives to the risk of HIV transmission.
His group is asking the government to let it give clean needles to addicts. It also wants the government to create treatment programs to help addicts stop their use of illegal drugs. Last year, activists launched a new education campaign to warn young people about the dangers of illegal drugs. Esther Vihamba works for the campaign.
The middle class have more money and all that, so they want the next high. Now they want to surpass alcohol and get into the cocaine, the heroin, and it goes as far as you can imagine.
Now it's time for our weekly look at the latest technology news. Solar panels are manufactured in factories. Some of the devices are made with cadmium chloride, a substance shown to be harmful to human health. But as our technology correspondent Jonathan Evans tells us, an American researcher says manufacturers may soon be able to create solar panels with safe, non-toxic solutions.
Solar cell technology currently depends on costly photovoltaic materials, such as silicon and cadmium telluride. Photovoltaic materials have the ability to take in photons from sunlight and release electrons. When these free electrons are captured, an electric current results. This current can be used as electricity. Thanks to photovoltaic materials, solar cell technology is expanding. But the cost of producing and using solar cells remains high. Troy Townsend has developed solar cell technology with less costly materials. But he adds that the technology is also less effective than the existing technology. Mr. Townsend is an assistant professor at St. Mary's College in Maryland. He says that silicon solar cells are usually between 16 and 18% efficient. The solar cells he and other researchers have developed are between 5 and 12% efficient. But he adds that the cells they developed could be painted or sprayed to make a device fully solution processed. This less costly material may be used to cover large surfaces, like housetops of a community. The photovoltaic material is produced by mixing nanocrystals, very small particles, with chemical compounds.
All of these layers we have been able to produce as an ink. They can be printed, sprayed, or spin-coated to make an entire device fully solution processed.
When placed on a surface, like a piece of glass, the ink layers have to be heated with another agent or substance. Troy Townsend discovered that this can be done with non-toxic salts instead of commonly used harmful substances. Individual cells can be connected to build up electric current or voltage. Mr. Townsend hopes that someday solar panel systems may become much more cost-friendly for individual users. The goal of this is to be able to put this in the hands of an average, everyday person. They have all the tools they need to build these devices in their home kitchen, he says. He hopes that more research will lead to the increased efficiency of paintable solar cells. I'm Jonathan Evans.
Thanks, Jonathan. That's our program for today. We hope it has informed and entertained you and has helped you learn everyday American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz at VOA Learning English in Washington. We'll be back tomorrow at this same time to help you learn everyday American English with another broadcast, webcast, and podcast edition of As It Is from the Voice of America. Thank you.
welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. As we reported in our last program, slavery supporters failed to push through Congress a bill to make Kansas a slave state. Congress instead let the people of Kansas vote on the statehood constitution, written by pro-slavery men. The people rejected the constitution, and slavery supporters gave up the fight for Kansas. Here are Steve Ember and Bob Doty to continue the story.
The problem of slavery continued to divide the North and South. Northerners warned that slavery could spread no farther. Southerners threatened to leave the Union unless Southern rights were protected. In the far West, one could forget this bitter dispute. There were no slaves in the West. The land and the weather were not right for the kind of farming that used slaves.
The West was growing quickly. Gold had brought thousands of settlers to California 10 years earlier. New discoveries of gold and silver now were leading men to Colorado, Arizona, and Nevada. "Don't go," warned the New York Tribune, "if you have a job or a farm. But if you have neither," it said, "and can get $50, then go to Colorado." There were many men without jobs or farms in the summer of 1858. The country had suffered a serious economic depression the year before, and jobs were difficult to find. Thousands left cities in the East. The first ones to reach Colorado reported that gold was easy to find. They said any man who worked hard could find $5 to $10 worth of gold a day, and sometimes even more.
The thousands who rushed to Colorado soon found that there was not as much gold as expected. The valuable metal became harder to find. No longer could it be washed from the bottoms of mountain streams. Men had to dig into the mountains of rock to get it. Huge digging machines and crushers were needed to get the gold from the rock. These machines were expensive. Few men had enough money to buy them. Some of the miners organized companies. They borrowed money from Eastern banks or sold shares of their companies. In a few years, almost all of the gold from Colorado came from the mining companies.
Many of those who went west to search for gold stayed to become farmers or storekeepers. Others moved farther west to find gold in Nevada or California. Some cleared the ground of trees and cut them into wood for houses. Such timber from the forests of Oregon and Washington was sold in California and Mexico, even in China and Hawaii. A few men recognized the need for transportation across the nation. Engineers planned 4 railroads, but Northern and Southern leaders could not agree on which one to build first. Until a railroad could be built, supplies were carried west in wagons, pulled by horses or oxen. 3 men, Russell, Majors, and Waddell, formed a transportation company in 1855 to carry government supplies to soldiers in the West. They started with 500 wagons. 3 years later, the company had 3,500 wagons and 40,000 oxen.
Getting letters to and from the West was not easy in the 1850s. Ships brought mail to San Francisco 2 times a month. And once each month, mail would arrive in California after a slow trip by wagon from St. Louis, Missouri. The federal government decided to send mail overland 2 times a week to California. It gave the job of carrying the letters to a new company, the Overland Mail Company. The mail was carried by train or boat to St. Louis. Then it was put on Overland Company stage coaches, light wagons pulled by 4 or 6 horses. The company was told to take the mail along a 4,000-kilometer southern route through Arkansas, Texas, New Mexico, and Arizona. The mail arrived in Los Angeles 24 days after it left St. Louis.
There was a shorter way across the country, but the postal chief was a Southerner, A.V. Brown. He believed stagecoach travel might lead the way for a railroad, and he wanted a Southern railroad to California. Brown said the Southern route was the only one that could be kept open in all seasons. He said the other routes would be closed by snow in winter. The overland stagecoaches were large enough to carry 4 passengers, but not many people went to California in the coaches. The coaches never stopped for very long, only to change horses or drivers, and there were not many places to eat. Also, the trip was dangerous because of hostile Indians.
The shortest distance between Missouri and California was across the central part of the country. The Russell, Majors, and Waddell Company decided to show that this central route could be used all year. It began a speedy mail service called the Pony Express. Letters were carried by riders on fast horses. Stations with fresh horses were built about 24 kilometers apart all along the way. A rider would change horses at each station until he had traveled 120 kilometers. Then he would give his letters to another rider. In this way, the letters would be carried between California and Missouri. The first letters sent by Pony Express from California took 10 days to reach Missouri. The Pony Express lasted only 18 months. It was no longer needed after a telegraph line was completed to San Francisco.
As communications and transportation improved, the government was able to increase its control over the West. But closer ties were not welcomed between the government and a religious group known as the Mormons. The Mormon religion was started by a young New England man named Joseph Smith. In 1823, at the age of 18, Smith claimed that an angel told him of a golden book. He said, "The book contained God's words to the ancient people of America." Smith said he was able to read the strange writing in this book and put it into English. He called this work the Book of Mormon.
He organized a church and made himself its leader. Many people became Mormons. They believed themselves to be a special people chosen by God. Mormons worked hard. They helped each other and shared with those in need. People who did not agree with the beliefs of the Mormons did not like them. Trouble developed between Mormons and other people. Joseph Smith was forced to move his people from New York to Ohio and then to Missouri. The Mormons seemed finally to have found a home in Illinois. They built their own town and called it Nauvoo. They governed themselves and had their own defense force. The Mormons did so well that Nauvoo became the fastest growing city in Illinois.
Oh, what a dreary place this was when first the Mormons found it. They said no white men here could live, and Indians prowled around it. They said the land, it was no good, and the water was no gooder, and the bare idea of living here was enough to make men shudder.
Then some members of the group split apart because of a new message Smith claimed to have received from God. Smith said God gave permission for Mormons to have more than one wife. This was polygamy, and it was opposed by almost all people. Some of the Mormons who left the church published a newspaper criticizing Smith and the other Mormon leaders. Followers ordered by Smith destroyed the newspaper's publishing equipment. This caused non-Mormons to demonstrate and demand that Smith be punished. Smith was arrested and put in jail in Carthage, Illinois. His brother also was arrested. An angry mob attacked the jail and shot both Smith and his brother to death. The governor of Illinois ordered the Mormons to leave his state. He said, only this would prevent further violence. There was no choice. They had to leave. The Mormons had a new leader, Brigham Young. Young decided to take his people west and find a new home for them. He wanted a place where they would be safe, where no one could interfere with their religion. Brigham Young told his people that he had seen their new home in a dream. He said they would search for it in the west, for a wide, beautiful valley. He said he would recognize it when he saw it. That will be our story next week.
Our program was written by Frank Beardsley. Your narrators were Steve Ember and Bob Doty. Our programs are online with transcripts, podcasts, and MP3s at voaspecialenglish.com. Join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, an American history series in VOA Special English.